All right, guys, it is the start of college football season. Currently, right now, me and Drew are watching Louisville versus Alabama. We'll be having it on throughout the duration of the podcast, but we're going to be talking about all sorts of things, how Minnesota turned it up today. Is Michigan State really a number 11 team? We're going to bring up a lot of questions. Will Greer, is he possibly a Heisman candidate, or should he just win the Heisman straight out? A lot of things to talk about, and a lot of penalty comments we're going to be making today.
But I'll call me Drake too.
Oh, yeah. Drew's here. But guys, let's get into it. What do you say? All right, guys. It is Drew and Bobby here with the podcast. Sonny will be joining me tomorrow. Maybe we'll do a little prelude into next week. Sonny works 6 days a week, so let's get that straight. It is tough to bring him on this podcast, but he will be a voice in here. Oh, my
gosh.
He dropped
it. What a loser.
Like I said, we're watching the Louisville versus Alabama game. Bama looks tough, as usual. Obviously, when you reload with five-star talent every year, it is ridiculous. But, you know, Drew, you had a hell of a start this season already. You guys have a quarterback in Anikstead.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I'd say he's one game and it's against a bad competition.
Okay, let me rephrase that. You have a quarterback that you have not had in years with Anikstead.
No, we have in one game, you can already tell we have a quarterback that understands how to throw.
Exactly.
You know, understands the passing game. You know, I can't tell you, 30 years now probably, the Gophers haven't had a guy who consistently can throw a football.
Yeah.
Throw a football. Like,
at one point,
routine routes.
Like, who is the Abdul Absad Khalid? Was it Abdul Absad Khalid?
Yeah, he was decent.
Yeah.
But he also had the benefit of not having to throw the ball very often because the running backs were so good. You know, it's just refreshing to see a kid, and he's a freshman, and you can already tell that he's going to be a better passer than what we've had in the last 15 years in one game.
You and I were texting during the game actually itself. I was actually at home with my kids. You were watching the Minnesota game. We were both excited. I was actually checking out the UND game at the same time. Not as much screen time, but still watching it. From what I saw from him was, for being a freshman, he is poised in the pocket. He did not have jitters. You could say that he had a few bad passes, but he did not seem jitterish in the pocket where he was making throws happen.
That's what you mean.
Yeah, he wasn't rushing it.
No. He did. You could tell he did have some jitters, though, just because he started out. I think the whole team kind of came out a little bit amped.
We brought up with Johnson, too. Johnson was missing
a few
catches.
He dropped two passes early that Annex had hit him right in the hands. And Johnson's going to be a top two-round pick, so.
He's got size.
He's only a junior.
And like I told you, he has vert too. He can be that guy that you can go in the red zone and just toss it up.
Absolutely. He's a basketball player.
Yep.
So I mean, he's got
there you go.
He can jump.
I saw him go
with
for
anybody.
I saw him go for one. It was early on the first, and he went up for one ball, and it went off his hands. He was trying to pay attention to the guy down below.
Yeah, I'll catch it. He'll make 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
But
it was like we said before, it was early on in the game, so obviously
the first two drives for the Gophers, there was some nervousness there. The offensive line missed some blocks. Just things that typically happen to a young football team. But Anix had proved he sat in there. He went through his progressions. In the past, Gopher quarterbacks have been known to take that first read, and if it's not there, tuck it and go, which is high school shit, and it's got to be coached out of a guy. Some guys, if you don't get that talented quarterback in there that doesn't already understand that when they come, it takes a while for that to develop.
Yeah, exactly.
And for this kid, you can tell he's been in a passing high school offense.
He understands
the quarterback position. And we have a staff now for the first time in Gopher history. In a long time, the coaching staff is an offensive-minded coaching staff.
The Fighting Flex. And here's one of the surprising things that I think that we discussed earlier before he even played, he even stepped on that field. You and I were talking, and he is a product of IMG Academy. He's from Minnesota, but a product of IMG Academy, which is, if you guys don't know what IMG Academy is, it's a mecca of high school sports. You bring in the best talent there. It is a private school.
You have to pay to go there. You're a lot of money to go there, and it's like ex-NFL, there's the coaches and all that stuff are, it's basically run like a pro or you know, like a pro yep. style. Like
I've
a
had
pro...
I've had to turn down letters because they're already asking for McCoy, and he's only 5 years old.
Yeah, I'm sure. And, I'm sure.
Yeah, they said he has a hell of an arm. Yeah, they want to sign for baseball and football. But...
they're already drawing it out of Bobby's 401k oh, for something out there. So
he's a meat stick. Anyways, but what the bigger picture was is that Arthur Satowski. Yes, and I'm not saying Arthur. It is Arthur Satowski. He was signed to go to Miami. He ended up opting out and going to Rutgers, which I'm thanking God that he did because after watching a few of his highlights in his games, he was not great. But he was actually, Anixed was actually the backup to Arthur Satowski.
Yes. Until Anixed. Like
probably week four?
Until Anixed proved that he was better, and then they played him the rest of the season.
Exactly. So then
They just played Satowski based on his merit.
Yeah,
they weren't playing him because he was necessarily better. It's just because he was committed to Miami, and they wanted that to be like a...
The top tier.
Well, no, they wanted to show people like, oh, yeah, this kid's committed to this school.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to play him and just see how it goes first.
Yeah,
because they want more kids to come in there.
And I'm glad that we actually kind of started cutting down on the recruiting talk to him just because it seemed like, honestly, when you looked at him play, like his mechanics are great. But I think when you can have the greatest mechanics in the world, but when it comes to actually playing the game and recognizing, you know, different things, it's a whole completely right. different package.
And there's definitely, I mean, it's not by accident.
No.
It's, oh, wow, that's not incredible.
That's a missed
this,
that.
This Alabama quarterback.
Fumble!
No, it's not. This Alabama quarterback. No, it's not a fumble.
There we go.
No, they're going to call that back. That's down by contact. Anyways, so this Alabama, we're watching Alabama-Louisville here. This Alabama quarterback, I love this kid. This kid's going to be an awesome NFL quarterback, too.
He's got a sick left-handed throwing.
He's good.
Formation. Yeah, it's this.
But, yeah, no, this he's down by contact here.
We were just talking about this earlier. Anyways, so we're going to talk about Anixed and everything. Like I told Drew, his poise in the pocket was great. He got over his jitters really quick. If he did have,
yeah,
any
no,
jitters.
He did. And if he watched, yeah, I mean,
it's Cosby.
Yeah, it is. So, anyways, yeah, no, that's.
But I said the only thing I said is that I saw him throw a few like little bubble screens, and it seemed like really slow to get there.
He doesn't have a great arm. He does not have
the
a
power.
Great arm.
The power was not there. You said that it's not going to improve much. I think it can improve a little bit. I think obviously going through strength programs, he's gonna improve it. But
his arm strength you're talking about.
Yeah, but it's not gonna be to the point where you're gonna go from basically having an arm like, I don't know, who's a shitty quarterback? Let's say Gus Frat to a Brett Favre. You know, you're not gonna have a Gus Frat to a Brett Favre.
Okay, no, I get that. No, the thing is that like it's tough. If you don't have some arm is something you just can't necessarily be taught or develop. That's arm talent. That's what we call arm talent.
Yep.
And Anixed is very accurate. Mm-hmm. He's intelligent, but he does not have great arm strength.
Yeah.
But with that being said, he still understands, you know, how to play the position, even as a freshman, better than Mitch Leidner or the guy they had last year, Croft. He has a way better understanding than those guys.
I don't want to talk about Leidner. Leidner. Hey, let's talk. I want to see if one day we can get Todd McShay on here. And just possibly just draw him in for like a quick little interview. Like, what did you see in Leidner that was going to be?
He was going to be a sneaky first
Wentz,
round pick.
Was Wentz-esque.
Ugh.
I mean, I feel like, okay, in a way, some of these analysts that are actually like observing the talent and actually making their judgment on him are kind of like weathermen in a sense. Like, they're seeing things, but they're judging it. It's a job where you can be wrong in a lot of different ways.
Honestly,
still get paid.
That's the best. That might be the most intelligent thing I've ever heard you say. In all honesty, because they are these NFL scouts and draft guys. They are. They're like a meteorologist.
Yeah.
You don't have to know 100% what's going to go on. You just kind of have a good idea. You know what I mean? Like, but
like when everybody said like Tim Couch is going to be the greatest guy in the world, or like Eric Crouch in the sense, or right. you could go with a million different
there's
players.
There's a lot of guys,
but. Yeah, it was. It's just not there.
They
got the ball back. But I mean, aside from Bannock said that was huge. The fact that you guys have a passing game now that you guys can kind of rely on.
It looks like we do. It looks like we have some sort of an idea. But we also have. That's the thing. I think offensively we're going to be very sneaky good this year. I think a lot of teams are going to underestimate us, and we're going to be sneaky good at offense. And that's with I'll just say this. Rodney Smith's probably one of the top two running backs in the Big Ten. He's gonna be a he's gonna be playing in the NFL.
He can read holes. He's fast. He's fast. He's very shifty. Is the thing for me. Like what I've noticed.
He never loses yards. He's he's the guy that
for being as small as he is, he can bulldoze shit. And like, I say small in a sense, like compared to other running backs. He's short in stature, but he's got a lot. He runs with a full fucking head of steam. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's you know. Oh, get out.
If they can put this pressure on all night, they're going to cause turnovers. You realize that, right?
No, yeah, they might. But no, getting back on topic here. This is, you know, watching this football and doing this shit's going to be a lot tougher than I thought it was. But anyways, so yeah, no, I mean, you got the Gopher offense is young every single position. They have one senior starting on offense, and that's the running back, Rodney Smith. Mm-hmm. Rodney Smith will be playing on Sundays in the NFL. He's that good. He can catch a ball in the backfield. He can block out of the backfield. He's a well-rounded back. He can do everything. He can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And now what you're also seeing is what PJ Fleck and Soraka and their and Matt Simon their influence on the wide receiver group, because the wide receivers that the Gophers have are absolutely legit. And it's junior, freshman, and they're absolutely legit.
You look at that too. You're saying in the receiving group, you're looking at junior, freshman. You said right.
Junior, yeah, and junior, a redshirt freshman, and two.
Look at that though, and you have a freshman queue
and a freshman quarterback.
You have talent there for at least 2 years.
3 years. That's by design, by the way. Yeah, exactly. That's recruiting by design there.
Fleck had to get guys in early. The reason I say 2 years is because you don't know if a guy's going to transfer. You don't know if a guy's going to maybe opt out to try to take that position and go somewhere else. But
why do guys transfer?
Because they're not going to get playing time.
Exactly. There are guys. These three guys will be playing.
Or else they murdered somebody and they go to last chance prison. Year. But I think that's such a positive note. Like, even if you guys... Obviously, I think you can be realistic just as much as anybody else here that it's not going to be a national championship.
No, absolutely not.
You guys will contend, obviously. You guys will contend a lot better than a lot of the lower tier teams with a lot of different programs as far as like the West goes.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I'm very realistic. Yep. If not, I don't side on positivity very often.
I know you don't.
Believe it or not, folks, I don't.
Drew could win a coin flip and he would still say, fuck. You know, like, you know what it is.
Like, it's... Like, I just... fuck you. The way I view it is, we have an offense now, or a system in place, that we can sustain for a long time. That's a fumble. That is a fumble.
That's a head on the ball. That's a good hit. That's what you're taught to do. All right.
But in all honesty, let's focus here. This is getting ridiculous.
We're at our prime. This is what we've been waiting for our whole life.
Damn it! And like, we've drank too much too, so that doesn't help.
You have. I've been drinking water. That's colored Coors Light.
Yeah. just can't focus here right now.
No. Okay. So I want to bring up a bigger thing here. Is that I asked you this earlier. I saw a guy named Green on the team, and he was bouncing off tackles. Like he scored a touchdown yesterday.
Thursday, I should say.
And I did not realize that it was Seth Green, who was the former quarterback to come from Oregon to transfer back. And I did not know he traded position. Oh, you fucking kidding me. You guys are going to do a turnover belt, you assholes. But he transferred back, and he became a tight end. Like, how?
No, they just changed his position this year.
So, yeah, they changed his position this year to be a tight end. And for him to perform the way he did says a whole hell of a lot. I mean, for him to see even change position and not go to a different school to be a quarterback.
Right. No, that was the thing. Like, Fleck sat him down. He had a meeting with Seth. He's like, you know what? You're our third string guy now.
Yeah.
But we will, you know, we can find a role for you.
Yeah.
We want you to, you know, we're going to have a weight program. We think you can play tight end because we know you can catch a ball.
Yep.
You just kind of got to learn the position.
And that's actually a really cool thing.
And that's exactly what they did. They drew up a wildcat formation for him and he scored two touchdowns. But that's a weapon when you can throw that wildcat formation in there while your guy is a quarterback.
Especially with a guy that's a tight end now. You know, like, it's like, oh, if you look at it,
he gained 25 pounds. He's 6 foot four, 240 pounds. And he's running the Wildcat, and he can still run a little bit.
Okay, so...
And he can throw the ball if we need him to exactly. out of the Wildcat, which is a very sneaky aspect.
So, years back, there was a guy, like Logan Thomas, that played for Votek. Votek's secondary school.
He moved to a tight end for the NFL.
He moved to a tight end for the NFL. So, it's great to see it happen now before he has to transition into that other position
right.
later on.
Because you get a look at what he can actually do in that role.
When I saw him, though, he was... fast as shit, like faster than what I would have expected.
No, he's an athletic guy. He can run and jump. He's gonna be that. They're gonna keep that Wildcat package in the back of their pocket, yes. in their back pocket. You know, like that's something that they proved there that they will be willing to do. And I know that they're gonna make a twist in the passing game out of that too.
Yeah.
Because you know, like if anytime you have an actual quarterback with that size, and you throw him in the backfield, you have those options to do different things.
I love the elusiveness of it because
that speaks.
You can't guarantee that guy's just gonna run the ball right off the bat.
No,
he's gonna step back. You know, he has a gunslinging arm. He's not like Antoine Randle L, or he's not like
that. Speaks to the creativity of this coaching staff.
Exactly,
PJ Fleck and Soraka. This team, the Gophers, going forward, and I said this. I think I said this from day one when they hired Fleck. Like, this is going to turn into an offensive program.
Yeah.
Where in the past, the Gophers have relied on playing that, you know, field position, run the ball, you know, type of game. Don't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
This is a different era. And I think that we saw that in game one of year two for Fleck and Soraka.
Yeah. Like I said, too, I was going with you. Like, it started off as a slow start. I was not keen on it. Like, I right away when I thought about you. When I thought about you and I was watching this game, I was like, he's got to be losing his fucking mind right now. He's got to be losing his mind. But then they started getting over things. Like most teams, like I think years past, the Gophers, they would never correct anything in a sense.
They were very vanilla. They had a vanilla system offensively.
Exactly.
They had a very vanilla, if it's not going to work, we're going to ride it out and ride our defense.
Exactly.
The defense had been
like
solid
old school
for
coaches
a good stretch.
Would.
Yeah.
Like old school coaches would. Like,
which
we're going to run that 24 half, like halfback blast right. until it can actually work.
Right. Which would, I mean, you know what? In a way, there is something to be said about that type of an offense and the fact that when you run that offense, you have a good defense like they have had in the last four, you know, they've had a solid defense. Mm-hmm. When you run that type of a offense and system and you do it right and well, like under Kill, you can win games. You can absolutely win games, but you cannot beat the top teams in your conference mm-hmm. playing that way. You have to be able to score some points.
Agreed.
That's why you saw that 3-year stretch there when Jerry Kill was coaching mm-hmm. before he had the seizures and had to leave. That's why you saw, you know, the 8-4, 9-4, you know, like you can get to that 9-win. Mason was the same way. People loved Mason in Minnesota for some reason, and I'll never get it.
Because he was
also limited in the exact same way because they ran the same type of an offense.
I think the reason people liked Mason is because the way, I think it was morals, I think what people liked about him. It was never like the winning style, like for, like legitimately for me in my aspect. But it was the way he could coach a team, and he was going to run it, and he was going to teach players how to...
Yeah, but he never beat the teams that were...
Exactly.
You could never get above that 8-win, 9-win fucking, you know, season.
Yeah.
Which drives me nuts that people just are like, oh, you know what, why did we fire Mason? He was doing a good job. I don't want a good job. I want somebody to come in here and do a great job and to take your team and to be able to say, listen, I don't give a shit if that's Ohio State. I don't give a shit if that's Michigan. We can beat that team, and we're going to go out there and going to do it.
I like that.
They fucking settled for so many years playing this vanilla bullshit, run the ball, no throw.
Yep.
You know, like...
But I think...
But, I mean, I will say this. Kill, it was different in that his running game was good, but he did it in a very slow fashion where Mason was the guy that had those... Kill had bully. He had some big offensive linemen that just, you know, took up space.
Manhandle people, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of their thing that they tried to do.
Yeah.
And Mason was a guy that had those fast, quick linemen that they would pull and run traps.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, and they'd run, you know, that smaller offensive linemen that were mobile. And
you're looking at, like, guys who are 6'2", 290, 280. Like,
guys
get around the corner and cook it.
Right. And that's the thing. And now we're seeing a completely different... You know, a completely different style of Gopher football that we haven't seen since Lou Holtz.
Yep.
You know, and he's, I mean, I love it because finally we're going to be able to get some skill guys in here, which we, right now, our offense is very young. It's only going to get younger after next year.
Yeah.
It seems like, because, you know, we do lose Rodney Smith, but we put Brooks in there because Brooks is on a medical red shirt, so he'll be back next year. So we don't lose much there. And then you bring all the receivers back, and then there's linemen that are waiting in the wings that I think are going to be just special. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. And just in an overview of the game, though, itself, it's a team that we were just way better than. We should have beaten them by what we did. You know, the game could have been worse than 48-10.
Yeah.
The defense needs work. That's the one thing I will say, is that the defense... We're gonna have a tough time against some of the better teams this year, stopping the run. Our secondary still is young, so they're kind of still learning. But
I think definitely, like, on a consistent basis, when you're looking at teams like, say, like a Bama, who's gonna keep on beating you up in the run game, or like let's be real about it. When you're looking at Midwest, you're looking at teams that are gonna keep on driving that down.
We're not gonna beat Wisconsin. We're not gonna beat Ohio State this year. Like. But some of those middle teams we are in the West, so this year I think that we're gonna have a chance to, you know, beat some of these teams. And that's what I'm saying. Like, we're gonna be an improved team, even if the record isn't like 9-whatever, you know, or 9 wins or 10 wins. Like, we're gonna be a better team. And then you can kind of see the game plan kind of formulated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of what the coaches are trying to build. And it's cool to see, because I think that, you know, just the wide receivers against New Mexico State, and who knows how – I honestly think the wide receivers, as young as they are, have a chance to be really special very soon. Mm-hmm. Like, they have a – Tyler Johnson, like I said before, is as good a wide receiver in the Big Ten as there is.
Yeah, he's also a hell of a goalie, too, in high school.
Tyler Johnson. Oh, you're going to – yeah, hometown. That's great.
No, but I agree with you. I think that there's so much more promise, and I think that there's so much more looking forward into this team in the years to come rather than the years that we've had in the past. Right. You being a Gophers fan, I think you've understood it more than anything, just seeing that first game compared to years.
Years past. Exactly. A really good point, because in the years past, you know, we play close games against bad teams. We've always done it. We never take the reins and just beat the shit out of somebody.
Yeah. And it's great to see it now.
And we did. That's what we did. We took care of business. After the first quarter, like, you get all the jitters out of the way, we were just dominating.
Yep.
And that's how it should have been this game. Next week, we play a good team, so I think it'll be closer. But it's all about improving from day to day, and, you know, we'll see how it goes from there. But it's good to see. I see progress as a Gopher fan. I do. I really do. And I can't honestly say that I can... I can't honestly say that I believe that we were doing that in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So we're on the right route, I think. And
I think you guys are, and honestly, like, I can't wait to see what comes of this team, especially, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe not this year. Like,
I'm a Minnesota guy too. Like, I've grown up in Minnesota. Like, obviously, I'm gonna root for any Minnesota boys that are coming in, and obviously, Anik said it's like a huge thing for me to see him go and perform the way he is and the way he has done so far. And all the promise that he's had so far. He's like the first true freshman to start for the University of Minnesota since like 1976 or some shit like that, I think it was.
True freshman, yes.
Yes.
True freshman, yeah.
It was some like odd year in the 70s, but it's awesome to see.
I think it was Ricky Foggy, who's the last guy to start as a quarterback when he was a freshman. And that would have been 70,
late 70s. Yeah, it was like 70s, something like that.
Early 80s, late 70s, I think.
And that's always a promising thing, too. When you hear that, like, you're just excited. But... let's get into the next topic. Gophers football, obviously, going on to be very promising. So, the Friday night game. There's a few of them going on, obviously. Michigan State, though. Michigan State struggling against Utah State. Number 11 versus an unranked. Now, I think that everybody overlooks anybody that's playing like a, you know, like a lower tier team.
Right. A non-power five type of team.
Yeah. They're going to overlook a lot of different things. But it wasn't like they overlooked them in the first half or the first quarter to compete with them. It was the whole game. It was the duration of the game. Does that speak volumes about Michigan State and like how they're going to progress throughout the year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. I mean, you're talking about a team that... should have handled this, you know, lesser a team that has lesser talent than them. But the thing is, it's like, you know, sometimes a game plan can go into play where you're just not expecting things or whatever.
Yep.
In this case, that's not an excuse because the gap in talent there is so much, you know, better.
It's huge there, I think. That, a lot.
I mean, and that's the thing, too. It's like Michigan State is ranked 11th to start the season.
11th.
Correct? 11th. They're not going to finish there, I promise you that.
I guarantee not.
Just by watching that game. That was not a... but then I really don't think that they... They have a decent quarterback, which will definitely help. But, these early season games, though... You never really know because you got a lot of young, you know, your young guys are getting acclimated to a system. You're playing first games are always kind of a crapshoot, so I'll give Michigan State that. But they just watching the game, they didn't look like they knew what they were doing, and they were a more talented team, and they definitely you know, let a team that wasn't as talented stay in the game, and it ended up being
the last minute 30 of the game where they actually ended up winning, basically off of a rush, tip up drill to the very same guy, and he picked it up.
Right.
But you look at that, and you look at Penn State today. Penn State struggled against Appalachian State. Now it's two teams from the Big Ten that it has nothing to do with conference in general, but that's two teams that are 11 and 10, basically. The 11th ranked team and the 10th ranked team that both struggle today. What does that say?
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking... There can be a whole lot of jumps. I mean, Texas today lost to Maryland, who was unranked.
Yeah, and that's a Big Ten team beating a 23rd ranked Texas team.
I go, and here's the thing. So you played... You have two teams that were really in close battles. Obviously, one went in OT. The other one went in the last minute 30 of the game. I think they drop rank if there's major upsets coming up. Like, I don't think they maintain that 11 and 10 spot if some other team's kind of went bigger.
I'm one of the guys that doesn't give a shit about rankings, though, too.
Yeah, well, it doesn't... Truthfully, it doesn't matter where shit, really.
It doesn't... Yeah, it really doesn't.
If you prove something...
Like, they're not voting based on what you're ranked, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like... I just think that, you know, in watching these early games, like, you can never really take too much... Because teams are going to improve, you know, like the young guys are going to get some experience under their belt. Like, do you look at the games and you say, a lot of mistakes were made by young players?
Yep.
Like, I mean, you're looking at a lot of things, and, you know, you don't really know. I'll just say that. You don't really know for the first couple weeks. There's going to be some jitters for young guys. There's going to be a lot of different situations where, you know, you find yourself thinking that, you know, you're not going to be, you know... let's just say this. Sorry, I got to backtrack here. But when it comes to playing, you know, these early season games, there's going to be things that you're going to make adjustments to where you're going to end up, you know, feeling more comfortable with your system. A lot of guys don't really understand the speed of college football.
No, especially when you have guys that are true freshmen starting something like that. They don't understand the speed of it either.
Right.
You can go through it all the time you want in
practice. Right, you can run practice, and it's not the same thing.
So when you're playing against top-level talent across the board, it's completely different. But, I mean, top-level talent, Appalachian State, and...
Yeah, it's a crazy thing to think about, but, you know, these are kids. Sometimes you don't view them like they're kids, but these are
18-20-year-old kids,
18-20-year-old kids that...
Young men.
Mentally, they're
I'll
not,
say young men.
Mentally, they're not fully developed at this point. Like... But so you don't really know what you're going to get. But
and another thing, too, for me is a lot of those guys that are going and doing this, who are playing this game, who are from these lower-tier teams, I'm not going to say lower-tier teams, but not expected to win, they're playing their hearts out.
It's their biggest game of the year for a lot of these teams.
These guys are going to try to make a statement. And like Appalachian State, now they are D1.
Yep.
You know, they're not D1AA like they were in the past when they beat Michigan.
FCS, yeah.
They're trying to get in the race. That's what they're trying to do.
I believe they're in the AAC, right? Connecticut.
I wanted to say Sunbelt.
Connecticut, Temple. Are they Sunbelt?
I wanted to say Sunbelt or something like that.
That's one we'll have to figure
WAC
out.
Or WAC or MAC or something like that.
It's not WAC. WAC is Western.
SWAC? Is there SWAC?
SWAC is FCS. That's the little
Okay. Guys. So, yeah, they're working their ass off trying to prove themselves.
They played a good game today. Like they battled the shit out of Penn State all the way to overtime. They made a couple mistakes at the end, and you can't do that to good teams. You're gonna lose.
So we're gonna go from that. There's another game on Thursday.
that I should probably give my boys a shout out for. UND started off their season. Obviously a season last year which wasn't highly touted.
Jerry Rice University they got to play
Jerry
against.
Rice University, exactly. Wasn't a highly touted game or team last year. They lost a bunch of linemen and basically a lot of different players to injury.
They had this linebackers like they were.
They were losing players left.
They had
and
a
right.
lot of injury concerns. Last
and then like I went back and I checked out. I think their second game of the season was against Utah, the University of Utah. And they actually held in pretty decently. I think the final score was like 34-17.
Yeah, they did. They you know they battled. They battled. I mean, it's tough to you know it's tough to go and, into a to a, especially I'll say this going to Utah even mm-hmm. is even tougher than you would think because the altitude. You know, there's
oh gosh, yeah,
that doesn't help either. So
yeah, you don't even think about
but
that.
But they
really.
Battled. They definitely they played a hell of a game against Utah last year. Like it wasn't they
and
kept
that
it,
was
competitive.
That was
relatively
a completely
competitive game.
With a completely different quarterback than what they had this year. And their quarterback this year, I mean, when I was seeing him sling the ball, like I felt more reassured to see him throw the ball rather than last year's quarterback. And not any disrespect to him, because obviously I can never play the position.
Is it Kessinger? Or is it, what's the last? Kenninger?
Kettingham. Kettingham or something like that.
Yes,
Kettingham.
Kettingham.
But he looked dynamite. He was throwing some balls. Obviously, some receivers dropped some balls. He looked really good. He was like 22 of like 30 something, I think it was, or 19 of 30 something.
Yeah, I mean that was a team that they should have beaten. It didn't really matter.
With some drops too. That was a funny thing.
No, I mean it was a team that they should have beaten. They did.
They went.
I watched part of the game. Yep. Like the Gopher halftime, I flipped it over there to see how.
And they went heavy into their run game.
Well, they got their deep at running back. They got the
they had three headed monster. Jonathan
Oliveira. They got three solid running backs for that squad.
And I think that was what I was impressed with. You know, Brady, I tell us a lot of people, everybody asks me, you know, like, oh, you know him, like, how's he been training, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I tell him, he's a 5'11", 220-pound back. And tell you the truth, he looked a hell of a lot better this year, like, right off the bat. That he was finding gaps. He was bowling over people. It was awesome to see.
Yeah.
He was doing what he should be doing with his frame, and he was even cutting up field. Like, he was doing things that weren't expected. But then you have the off change with Santiago, who can – you can run that wide sweep, you know, and he can find a gap there.
Yeah.
And then you had Johannesson, who is a fucking bulldozer. Yeah. He is just a straight-up bulldozer.
I think he put on about 25 pounds since he was at Minnesota.
Yeah, he must be 320 pounds of just pure muscle, because that guy is a beast.
No, he's gotten a lot bigger.
He's big.
He was, because I think the Gophers, when they recruited him, I think they gave him the opportunity to play running back.
Yeah.
With the intention that he would stick around to play linebacker for them, so they could convert him, but he didn't want to. I don't think he wanted to.
I don't like that, though. Like, that's...
Well, that was the thing. It was like that. They gave him a shot to win the running back job, and then put they had Rodney Smith and Chandler Brooks. Exactly. He's not gonna win that job. So, but, like, you know, like he, so he's like, well, I'm not gonna play. Like, I want to play running back somewhere.
But
they liked him as a linebacker. That's why I think that he came back.
Yeah,
that's my opinion at least.
He's a beef house. He's a big guy. And actually, when I was watching him carry the ball, he had one of the drives, which was really cool because he had like a 10-yard gain, and he rolled into a Mississippi Valley State player. And the guy stepped on his balls. Like, he was trying to stop him with his foot originally, and then he stepped on his balls.
What do you mean? So, like, he tried to tackle
the player. So, Johannesson was laying on the ground, rolling over into the player. And the player stopped him with his foot, essentially, and then stepped on his balls with his cleats.
Stepped on his dick?
Stepped on his dick. And then he steps
that
on...
That sucks.
He stepped on his fucking shin, like, purposely, like a Albert Haynesworth kind of thing.
Oh, dirtballed it.
Dirtballed it straight up.
Dominican Sue, too?
Yeah, it was bad. That's dirty. When I saw that, I was like, this fucker's going to bulldoze it in for a touchdown right now. And like I think it was like a player or two later, he ended up just bowling it in.
Yeah.
There was no
boy,
doubt.
He's a big boy now. I've heard that he's put on a lot of weight.
Yeah. But congrats
to...
To
be the Peyton Hillis type.
Yeah.
that's what I hear. Big white running back, I think. Peyton Hillis.
The one-year Madden wonder.
Yeah.
But congrats to... All my Fighting Hawk boys out there, Leonard the Fourth, Bryce Crouch, John Santiago, and Brady Oliveira, you guys are legit, and I'm glad for you guys, and I can't wait to see what happens. But let's get into some other topics, some bigger games. We see Ohio State going up 77, big offense.
Yep.
Oregon State, 31. What is that?
Oregon State is...
The D!
Is bad.
Where is it at?
I'm not surprised that they did that. I mean, people act like it's 77 points. Yeah, it's a lot of points, but it's Oregon State too. Like that's They're no better than any Mountain West team right now.
No, what I'm saying is that they have their offense. They have their offense prowess, so that's good.
They should have beaten them by a lot. 77 is a lot. Don't get me wrong, that's a lot of points, and that's pretty impressive itself. But still, it's like you're not playing anybody. Just like I said, you can't really draw any conclusions after week one. And I'll never do it. I'll just say you speak to the positives, and you speak to progression from last season, but you can't really put a finger on how they're going to be, you know, from week to week, because it's a game of adjustments, just like baseball is, but not to the, you know, not to that extreme, but it's a game of adjustments. So you kind of got to figure out, you know, what kind of team you got before you move forward and figure out, you know, what you're going to, you know, what kind of team that you actually have, you know what I mean? So first, I'll say even the first 2 weeks of the college football season, get your young guys acclimated, figure out what they can do, and then you're kind of going to see a consistency, you know, one way or the other. Yeah. You're going to see kind of see what your strengths and weaknesses are after a couple weeks, you know, because guys are fitting into their systems and whatnot. And
now we got Will Greer out of West Virginia playing against the top. You're looking at SEC, you're looking at SEC teams, you're looking at talent, no matter what you're looking at, really.
Yeah, you're a good athlete.
You could be looking at Vanderbilt, you're going to have like maybe a sneaky pick or two in there. Obviously, you had Jay Cutler and whatnot, but you're going to be looking at Tennessee. Tennessee, who is trying to pride themselves on coming back soon, you know, obviously. But you got the thing where you have Will Greer, who is already a Heisman candidate, basically Notch.
Well, he's a watch list guy.
How
often are the watch lists fucking accurate at the end of the year?
Exactly.
They're not. So it doesn't really matter.
When you look at Greer is... It's not like he's had one game where it's like, you know, it's a 450-yard game, then he throws for 150.
Right.
He's consistently at that 250 mark or more throughout the season. Like, and he has multiple passing attempts. Like, you're going to see him probably have right around 30... I'd say 30 to 40 attempts a game.
Right, yeah.
You know? And that's one of the things. It's basically like a Texas Tech offense with West Virginia. He's going to air raid the shit out of the ball.
No, yeah, they got a guy that can throw the ball. Will Greer, he's a good quarterback. Who knows how they're going to, you know. Typically, when you talk about a Heisman guy, it's a guy that at the end of the year, at the end of the year, his team's still in it. If Will Greer's team's 8-4 at the end of the year, he's not winning shit.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest.
Wow.
Alabama's going to win the national title again this year.
Alabama, well, they're playing against Louisville, who doesn't have Lamar Jackson.
I don't care. Louisville, Alabama's winning the national title again this year. They can win. They can, and mainly because even if they do lose two games, they're going to get voted in anyways. I'm serious. That's just how it's going
to. They'll lose a game to the School of the Blind.
Yeah.
And a women's field hockey team will still make it in.
Yeah. No, just watching this game, Alabama's going to win the national title
again. Alabama has so much talent. Like I said, they reload every year. It's ridiculous. Yep. Like, you can tell Louisville's team is tired right now.
Yep, great coach. You know, they got
a lot. And you have a quarterback who just basically bulldozed it in almost into the touchdown, and he's down to one. He's like a gain of like five.
Yeah.
Okay, so Will Greer, obviously hot topic, huge thing there. You have Maryland upsetting Texas, which I don't know what they were doing being ranked, truthfully. Texas has not had talent for years.
Well, they've had talent. They've had bad coaching for years. Ever since Mack Brown.
They haven't had, like, the typical talent. Like, when you had, like, McCoy there, Vince Young. Like, you had people to be around him that were, in a sense, going to carry the team. Like, you had all-star players. Obviously, Ricky Williams and stuff like that. Yeah. You don't have those big-name players anymore.
No, but at the same time, there's a reason you don't have those players. Because the coaching staff that had the good teams was recruiting those players.
That's true. I guess
they haven't had that. If they had, who's it, Strong, right? Was he strong?
Strong, pretend strong before, yeah.
Like, they had a good stretch there of coaching that didn't recruit to the level that Texas usually recruits to. And it's kind of like, well, you can't be pissed at a team for being bad when they're not.
Which, I'm wondering what's going to happen when Todd Herman's, like, draft classes actually come through.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Like, it's one of those things where you don't really know, but it's Texas. I mean, like, they should be good every year. And they've been average at best for the last 10. It's... You know, ever since the 2005 national title game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is, but this is college football. Like, it's every year anything can happen. Like, there's a lot of upsets that happen that you don't see, and it's crazy, but, I mean, it's Alabama and then everybody else.
Yeah. Okay, so I bring up another thing here. We have Washington versus Auburn.
Oh, another great game.
Auburn upset Washington. I don't know if how much they're pretty much on the same kill. I don't know how much a big of like that upset that really is. Auburn's obviously really good. Washington's really good. It was a tight game, 16-21. Kind of like what you expected it to be. And they, you know, Washington doesn't end up pulling it out. Next week they play UND, which is going to be, it's going to be an experience, really, I think, for the UND players.
I can't believe, yeah, you talk about scheduling a, oof, yeah, no.
But I think, well, when you look at it, like, you want to schedule those kind of games to see what your players can match up against. Like, you want to give them.
No, it doesn't hurt UND because nobody expects them to do anything against Washington because Washington is one of the best 10 teams in the country. Like, just going on paper, going into the season, like, they're, you know, there's a reason they got ranked preseason top 10 because they got a lot of talent coming back.
And you look at it, though, it's like when we talked about it before, you look at the Utah State and you look at the Appalachian State. Like, they played up to par with these bigger teams. Like, I'm not going to say they're going to probably dominate Washington like the other two teams did, but if they keep that mindset in there, they can actually compete and they can actually build some confidence up.
No, I mean, if you can, yeah, absolutely. If you can play like some sort of a, you know, if you can go into a, in, you know, into that game and compete for a while.
Yep.
Because let's be honest, like, everybody thinks you're losing 70-0. Yep. You go in there, if you put up a fight, it does build confidence. It brings you to that, you know, that idea that, hey, man, we competed with some of the best in the country.
Yep.
And then you say, you know what, next week we play who? All the confidence in the world comes from competing with big schools.
Exactly.
Even if you don't win. You know, and I know that firsthand.
Yeah.
Because baseball wise, you go into. If you go into. You play Kansas, you play Kansas State or whatever, and like this is in baseball.
Yeah.
Kansas, we were in the ninth inning, we're down, you know, we lost, but we were up the whole game. Or Nebraska. We were playing Nebraska in Nebraska, and we were up 8-0 going into the ninth. Or into the eighth inning, and we ended up losing the game. But
I think it was.
That's what I'm saying. It's the same concept.
It had to be a few years after. I think it was like 3 years ago. Before they got rid of the baseball program, they beat USC.
Yeah.
They beat USC then.
How big of a confidence booster would that be?
Huge. That's huge for anybody. That's what I'm saying.
Like, that team would, you know, and then they say, you know what, after they beat USC, it's getting out of hand. We've got to cut this program. Hey, guys, sorry. I know you had a really good series against the top 15 team in the country.
Yeah.
And you won 3 of 4.
But we're going to ask the program time.
Now. You guys will no longer be able to play here next year. So what do you have to play for?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a different topic on a different day.
But when you're talking about like that, I think that we can both agree on something. I think that's something that's both shared when we played against Excelsior, which was...
Yeah, underdog. The underdog role is something to be... There's something to be said about the underdog role. That's a real thing. People go in there and be like, you know what, if you have some competitive fire to you, and everybody tells you that you can't do this, you can't do it, you can't do it, you can't do it.
You're gonna go in there
and you're like, you know what, fuck these guys.
Yeah, you're like, fuck everybody. You have an attitude where it's
right. It's us
where I come back to is it's swagger. Swagger. You're getting told you're not gonna do something, like, fuck you, I'm gonna go and do it.
Exactly.
When we played Excelsior, by the way, this is high school Legion ball. By the way, we're going back a little bit.
This is a long time ago.
This is the number two. A decade and a half ago. Runners up in the national championship the year before we played them.
They were the runners up in the Legion World Series. They lost to Pennsylvania or something.
We played them in state the following year and we beat them.
Let's not forget the first time we played them. We played them in the state tournament the year before. They were the number one ranked team in the state.
We
lost. They killed us. It was 10-0. We both return everybody.
Yep.
We return our whole team. They return their whole team.
Plus me, the guy who struck you out with the.
Oh yeah. No, you didn't.
Yes, I. Wicked curve, bro.
But then, yeah, okay. So we had some cheerleaders in Bobby, and then another guy, and then another guy.
We had Nathan Osick and Pete Shelcock.
We had two great cheerleaders that, you know, they brought their skirts every day and they came to compete.
But you know what the funny thing was too is like, okay, so when you're looking at that game, but we're way off track here, I know. But we look at that game. But we looked at the game that we played against Champlin Park.
We steamrolled.
Six guys were on the fucking bench.
Yep.
That were starters usually because of curfew regulation violations.
Yeah, we had too much fun.
Quote unquote. And I just made it to my room in time because I was pissed drunk. And I made it back to the room, and next thing you know, Gus was like, "You're starting second base." I go, "Aha!
Good one."
He's like, "No, seriously." I was like, "No."
oh shit, you're serious right now. And they hit a ball with the gap finally, and I got it, and I dove for it, and Poof is just looking at me, he's like, don't try to throw it. Don't try to throw it. I was like, I'm not gonna. I'm just sitting here staring right now, man. But, like, you look at that. Like, that game was 1-0.
Yeah, it was close.
For 5 or 6
and
innings.
And that was, our starters weren't in the game.
Exactly.
Like, we had 7 guys out.
5 or 6. I remember Pete going up before me, and Pete.
We're like the North Carolina basketball of Legion Baseball.
I think that was the year that we went like 63-9 or something.
Yeah, no, we were 44-16, I believe.
You sure that year? I thought we had Gary Molk had hats.
Tommy Solom, well, because he was on the team that went 52. Team that went 52-9 was the year before with Tommy Solom, not Casey Solom.
Okay, I remember a team like Gary had like hats. Like we only lost like a handful of games. I think that.
Yeah,
year.
We were like 44-12 or something like that. Really good, but we ended up playing Excelsior twice in the state tournament, back to back years. God. The first year they killed us, and they were so arrogant. Like, they're just like, it was just a very cocky.
Came out with cups of tea, their fucking pinky pointed up, you assholes.
They were Russell jumpsuits to like a formal.
What a bunch of losers. Now I'm looking back at it, fucking dicks.
Russell jumpsuits to a formal banquet. Where like they had the fucking governor or something like speaking at it.
Okay, I remember that because it was in Rochester. And Gusto goes, you guys got to bring a suit. Gusto goes, button up a tie.
Yep.
We all wore button-up ties. Everybody else is wearing suits
or team
outfits.
Every team had a shirt and tie on. And then they...
We look like a bunch of fucking bus boys.
Yeah. And then
I'm pretty sure a player handed me a plate like, here you go, Juan. I was like, fuck you, asshole.
Excelsior is the Mighty Ducks team from... That shows up in the Russell jumpsuits.
What is it? It's fucking Eden Hall.
That's exactly what it was. So we ended up playing these guys the first year, this one year in the state tournament. They beat us pretty good. Like, it was competitive for a few.
I was not part of that team, but yeah, that came in the year after.
Yeah, and then they ended up rolling us. I think it was a 10-0 game, I think, at the end. And then we played in the exact same teams showed up. Everybody returned everybody.
Yeah.
So we came back the next year, and they came back this year, and they were just higher in shit because like, we're the number one ranked team in the country for Legion Baseball. And in the state tournament, we come and we beat them 8-6, and they brought in there. We ended up, the game was close early. It was like 4-4 going into like the fifth. They bring in this one guy because they're like, oh man, like it's getting close. We got to shut this down. They bring in this guy that's pitching for ends up. I think he pitched for like. I don't know if it was the Gophers or it was a Big Ten school, or it might have been down south or like Mississippi State or something. Yep. Like they brought in some stud, a kid that got like drafted.
Yep.
And we shelled him. Like we raked on. Matt hit a double off. My brother hit a double off.
Yeah, your brother. I remember your brother hitting a fucking sharp drive up the gap.
Yeah, it was
and
a
was
line
like,
drive that got like 5 feet off the ground. And that's where like we got this.
Yep.
Because it was a big park. Because
I think that was the momentum thing, though, too. You're just sitting there, you're just jacked up.
Yeah.
You're clapping your hands, you're jumping
exactly.
up and
down. Exactly, you're ready. Like, you're like, we got this. Like, we can get these fuckers. So,
oh, God.
But the thing about that game was that I loved the most is that, like, our team was a bunch of lumberjacks.
Oh, God,
right?
Yeah.
Our team was huge. We had big boys on
lumberjacks
our team.
Lumberjacks.
Power hitters like crazy. Like,
and a home
had 10 home
a guy you find outside of Home Depot with the big oranges,
runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it was, like, Tommy Dostal and Gary Molk. This is a bunch of bearded... Big, strong.
I still remember
lumberjacks and Evan Gaddises. We had a bunch of Evan Gaddises on our team. We did, and so so when we played these like little pretty boy, small,
the preps, the cake eaters.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I like.
The Mitch Dolans of the world.
That's what I like to call it, but
I call them the Mitch Dolans of the world now. I call them, the reason I say that is because Mitch lives in like Egan. I'm pretty sure that Mitch sits outside of his garage of his fucking mansion, and he rolls around on his skates. And then there's a bunch of like series of other hockey players that are in like the lower schools, and they go up and they ask him, "Hey, you ready to play hockey, cake eater?" And Mitch goes, "Yeah," you know. But
that was one of the better sports moments of my life. Just because of the fact that we knew that we weren't favored, but we knew that we had the ability to beat anybody when we played well.
You know what one of the best sports moments of my life was? And I'm not going to say anything to really degrade you in a sense. But we went to... Me and you have been very good friends. Like, we've... From football. Or not from football, but from baseball. Like
great,
we've,
baseball, yeah.
Tight night group. And you had come out to see us play in the Alaris Center our senior year when we were playing against Crookston. Hell of a game.
Yeah, yep. Came and watched. Yeah.
And
supported my friends, yeah.
We ended up winning. And you were sitting, like, lower row, probably at, like, the 30.
The fourth row up, yeah.
And we were literally, like, slapping hands. And I spotted you out of everybody. And I basically give a big fuck you to all our fans. And I went to go celebrate with you. You're like, you did it! You did it! I was like, yeah, what do I do now? I don't know what the fuck's going on.
What do I do with my hands?
We're going to state! And I was like, I don't know. That's like what I think that you look at the bigger part of sports is obviously winning is a huge thing. But the friendships you develop off of them are absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. That's what I liked about the old Legion Ball. Because that was just like... And the best part about Legion Ball was not only were we really good for like a 5-6 year stretch there,
yeah.
But we had, you know, we were the underdog every big tournament we played in because we're about the size of our town. 9,000 people in our town we're playing against. We're in the same division as every Minneapolis school,
yep.
Legion school, and we go out and they'd think nothing of us, and we would steamroll the shit out of most of those teams.
I think that's one of the things I'll give Gusto absolute credit to is the fact that. It wasn't the fact that he planned all these games against lower tier teams or anything like that, but he scheduled so many games for us to improve every year. And like, he would schedule the game. Like, if you look at, like, a regular Legion team, you would probably see, like, maybe 30 or 40 games, something like that. Gusto would schedule, like, that, like, 60-game season, the 70-game seasons, you know? Like, he would do that.
I was like,
and I loved it. Any
baseball guy would love that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean.
We did every
year. And I think that's why there was a brotherhood against, like, with all of us, really.
Because we spent every day together.
Exactly. And it wasn't like, the funny thing was, too, is it wasn't like we would go and practice and then we would just wouldn't see each other until the next day. It was, we'd go and practice and be like, are we playing cards tonight? Or are we going to go roll around tonight?
Because we get to the practice and be like, oh, we got to play cards because we got to get in the bus because we're driving to Duluth. Or we play tournaments and shit. So it would, that was awesome, man. And it was like, it was a way to kind of merge the town together too because you got the two schools.
Oh, God, yeah.
So you merge the two towns together and you got to get along with, you know, like to be a team.
And then you had the outsider, Mike Amundson.
Yeah, Grand Forest.
No, but we went really sidetracked there because we had a little moment, guys, but we had to do it. But let's get back into this game right now. We're basically just talking about what it takes to possibly upset another team or to compete against another team, and obviously we discussed that into a further detail. Right now we're watching like Louisville, like we said earlier, against Alabama, and they're getting steamrolled.
Yeah, Alabama's going to win the national title this year.
But when you look at the bigger picture, there's a whole lot going on right now in college football, and I think we're both grateful, me and Drew. And it's
#blessed.
#blessed because it's college football season, and there's so many games to keep track of. It's ridiculous. For me, I think that I think Bama's performing. Jalen Hurts finally gets in. Basically, it's a fucking preseason game for Alabama, which doesn't make much sense.
Alabama's gonna win the national title again, so I mean.
Oh, Jesus.
They're definitely going to be in the playoff. I can't see them losing two games. I mean, especially since they rarely schedule anybody in the non-conference.
But we we jumped from games now. We went from Alabama, who's ass-kicking Louisville right now, 21-0, to switch up to Notre Dame, who's winning 21-10. A little bit more promising of a game. So
right now.
As of right now.
Two teams that I dislike, personally, but just me.
I agree with you. Obviously, Catholics versus convicts does not rest easy with me. And my brother's a big Ohio State fan, so I have to just basically...
By default.
I have Michigan. To hate
the
blue.
Understandable. I mean, I hate both Ohio State and Michigan, so it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter to me, but I think that I hate Notre Dame more just because of this, like, idea that there's some, like, you know, there's some, like, moral fiber to that school, which I'm not convinced there is, you know.
For Notre Dame, you know what the funny thing is, too, is you came from a Catholic school.
Yeah, like, I say that. Like, yeah, like I'm not I'm far from perfect. Like, see that, like, don't think that you can recruit kids from, like, these public high schools and like, transition them into, like, you know what I mean? But no, I hate Notre Dame. I always will. I mean, we have friends that are, you know, like Jeff, Irish Catholic. He's like...
Jeff is a different type. You know who I would like... You know what the funny thing is, too, is with this podcast, we can actually call Jeff and we can actually get him to just talk about a game one
time. We really could if we wanted.
And now that he's living in Zona, I think he's probably going to want to.
I don't think he's there yet, is he?
No, I don't think not yet, but soon. Ooh, that's a nice catch.
Uh-oh.
That's a nice catch.
Michigan coming back.
Oh, God. But, you know, we're looking at this game right now. There's not a whole lot of promising games for the rest of the night. Tomorrow, my friend. It's a different deal.
Bobby's boys are playing.
Oh.
Turnover chance coming out.
The Thugs. Everybody always talking about the Thugs and all the fucking jail time shit. Let me tell you something about Miami.
Well, there's no jail time.
A lot of people
talk. They might take benefits from people, but.
Oh, yeah, I guess. You look at it. No, my Miami Hurricanes coming out tomorrow playing against LSU in Dallas at AT&T Stadium. I believe that's Jerry Jones Stadium, right? AT&T?
I don't know. Is that what they call it?
I think it's AT&T Stadium.
Okay.
Kind of a home game for LSU, but not. I mean, obviously, it's a neutral site. Suppose a neutral site. It's
definitely
site
closer to...
It's closer to LSU.
Closer than to LSU than it is.
But, you know, it's a big game. You know, with the way that Miami ended up last year, losing three straight that they did, you know, it's kind of a tough thing. You know, you lose to Pitt. It was one of those games where I think they were looking towards the next game. They played against Clemson. They got steamrolled against Clemson. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. They got steamrolled. I was sitting at my wife's Christmas party, and I was watching the game on my phone, and nobody wanted to talk to me because they saw how bad I was upset.
Yeah.
And then...
Trust me, I've been there.
And then they played against Wisconsin. They came out firing against Wisconsin. I think they were up to an early lead of 17-0, and then
I've never rooted for Miami so hard in my life.
They screwed the pooch on that. I don't... I love my boys, though, no matter what. They gave me a good season last year. Mark Richt is doing amazing things there. I can't hold anything against them. So much talent. So much talent. This year, we're returning a quarterback, Malik Rozier. Now, Nikosi Perry, our backup quarterback, is actually suspended for the beginning.
What did he do?
Team violation. He's actually not making the trip at all. He's getting sat.
He's a backup quarterback.
He's a backup quarterback.
As long as the guy doesn't get hurt, it's not going to hurt the team.
He was a backup quarterback that was actually competing for the first job. And then it basically just became a battle between him and Cade Weldon, who's another backup quarterback, which I'm not too worried if Cade Weldon and him were competing this far into the camp, you know?
Right, for the number two.
Yeah, for the number two. If, by God, hopefully Malik Rozier doesn't go down, Cade Weldon can step in and try to accommodate that. We have a three-headed monster at running back again. Travis Homer coming in hot. DJ Dallas, who was a quarterback in high school, came in to play receiver at Miami. Ended up getting put back at running back for a wildcat position, and they said, you're much better running back than anything.
Right.
So, our offensive prowess is huge. We're returning in a lot of players. Amon Richards, a guy who's got extreme talent. He came off injury last year. He had that sophomore slump. But his freshman year, he broke Michael Irvin's record for receiving, which is...
Freshman record?
Freshman record, yeah. You're looking at Michael Irvin? That's a pretty good record to break.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping to God he stays healthy and he does amazing things. Look, I know he can. We have Lawrence Cager, who's going to be stepping it up. Jeff Thomas, a good short guy out of the slot, who's going to be doing amazing things as well. And then we have Brevin Jordan, who is a true freshman tight end. 6'4", after Michael Irving Jr. actually got hurt. He's going to be stepping it up. We're going to be doing hopefully some huge play calls with him because he's a big body with some speed and great catching ability. Overall in offense, oh, God, I'm drooling, Drew. I'm drooling.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of reason to be excited about Miami. I mean, Miami is always going to have a lot of talent. It's kind of just, I think that they're in a really good position based strictly on, and I'm not saying that their schedule is necessarily weak, but they don't have to go through the gauntlet of the SEC or Big
Ten.
They don't have.
I'll agree. I'll easily agree with you.
Like, and that's the thing. You got Clemson, you got Virginia Tech, and you got you know, there might be a sneaky team.
You have some sneaky piece in there in the ACC. You have Boston. I'm going to say this right now. It's Boston College is actually really sneaky. I think they're going to be very sneaky. Unsurprisingly.
They have a great running back.
Exactly, and they have a decent quarterback, NC State, with Finley, who's going to be actually he's going to be a top.
No
round.
Chubb though. That's what
they have. No Chubb.
Chubb's gone.
But so. Finley is a big body who's going to be a top pick in the draft. Actually, he's going to be a good quarterback coming out this year. But you have the Dungy too from Syracuse, who is very, very good.
You got but that's pass the thing happy. Is that with Miami though, and this is just from a college football fan from the outside looking in. But it's an obvious thing. It's like Miami's always going to have more talent. What a dumb.
What a Jim dumb Harbaugh play.
Is. Anyways, Miami's Miami's will always be one of the more talented teams in the ACC.
I think it's because they take the chance. I think they take a lot more chances on
They have players. All the talent in the world, right? Within 20 minutes of their campus.
And I think they built a strong... Oh, that's because it was a muff.
Muff punt, yeah. Muff field kick. Hold.
But...
the holder.
I think they have... They built an ongoing kind of relationship with teams like Northwestern. Like teams like that. They built a long-standing relationship with those guys, and the players go and see that, they see the talent that's went there, and they bring him in, Carroll City and stuff like that.
Right.
And I think it's great to see that, but I think they're expanding a little bit more even outward, which is huge. Like I said, our running game is going to be huge. Hopefully our offensive line is going to be able to sustain a lot of things, be able to open up gaps like they did last year. We're only losing, I think, one or two players. Trevor Darling, who was our tackle last year, was actually just got arrested for drug charges.
No. Not in Miami.
Well, I don't know what you call it, because he had drug charges against him, but it was, he had like less than an ounce, and he had like a grinder to shred up weed.
Okay.
So, it's like,
you know, 15 years from now, that's probably going to be illegal to do.
That's what I mean. It was like a recreational thing, but you don't get caught as a player to do that shit. Like, you have bigger things on the line.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. Like, he probably shouldn't have...
And he was also picked up by a few teams. Actually, he was actually picked up by a team in the draft last year.
Yeah, no, I mean, he probably... That's probably a bad decision.
I think it was a bad decision.
If there's one thing that they're like, hey, you can't... there's one thing you can't do. It's like, you can't deal or do drugs.
Yeah.
Well, you play college football.
Yeah.
He did the opposite of what they told him to
I'm gonna
do.
I'm going to try to make it a little extra cash.
So, yeah, I could see how that would probably...
But, you know, I think that's... We have maybe two offensive lineman losses on our line, Casey McDermott and Trevor Darling. But other than that, everybody returns on offense. And Chris Herndon. So we had three people out from last year's offensive team. Mark Walton, too, but Travis Homer took over the reins on that. Midway through the season. Game 4, he still had 980-some yards rushing, which is very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, and Mark Walton's a hell of a running back. He's a talented running back.
And now he's in
Cincy. And now he's in the second string.
Second string with Cincy, yeah.
You know what, dude? The best quote I've ever heard from any college coach ever.
What's that?
And this isn't even being a... I'm sure somebody said it before, but I heard it. I heard P.J. Fleck say this.
What's that?
So I'm gonna play the Homer card here and say, PJ Fleck said to his players, like, this is word for word, this is like in an interview, he goes, my job is to find somebody better than you to take your place. It's up to you
to keep it.
To keep your job.
I love that.
Get better.
That's honestly what it is. Well,
and not one player can look at him and be like, no, you're wrong. Like, no player can disagree with that.
No.
Like, it's in recruiting, you're trying to find guys that can replace the guy ahead of you.
But that makes the players work so much harder.
It does. It makes the players work harder.
I love it.
It makes the practices more competitive. Everything. You get the talent there. Like, that's the real deal, man. Like, it's a brilliant thing to kind of say. It's, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, it's just how it should be. Like,
it should be.
Kids are babied these days to the point where, like, if they're not playing, they transfer out right away. But if you bring it to them straight and you're like, you know what? You're playing shitty football right now. I got a guy coming in that's probably going to be better than you. Like, what are you going to do to change the fact that this guy is going to take your job?
Exactly. You got to see those guys compete. Honestly, if I'm a coach, I'm going to play that guy with a little bit of younger talent and make him work a little bit harder. Make that bet work a little harder.
Do you want to know where I kind of got a glimpse of that firsthand?
Where's that?
The first time I... Legion Baseball. There's a lot of kids that we played baseball with growing up that felt entitled to be able to play, even though they weren't better, even though younger kids were better than them.
I agree with you.
Do you know what I mean?
I do.
There were people that we grew up with, and that's just from baseball. I don't know how it worked in other sports for you or whatever, but like baseball growing up, you saw kids thought that they were better than they were.
Yep.
And they got replaced, or somebody was better than them, and they ended up getting pissed and quitting, or, you know, the pussy way out is what I like to call it.
So here's a quick little fact. Actually, in football, it happened to me. So I thought I was a captain part of the team. You know, I was the captain of the team. One of like five.
You can be a captain and not be a starter.
Exactly. Well, I was the captain of, you know, one of the five captains on the team. And I started slacking at linebacker like week seven. Like, I just thought shit was going to come my way. And like, I just started slacking. I didn't pay two shits about it. I got replaced by Chris Finglin. And I was fucking pissed. I was angry as shit. And I had to work my ass off to get it back. And then I took it back. And then I started slacking again. And then Cap Richards took it over.
Yeah.
And then they put in Bucklew. I think when they put in Bucklew, which, no disrespect to Matt Bucklew, he worked his ass off. But it just made me even more angry. Like, a guy who didn't play linebacker basically the whole season, and all of a sudden, they put him in for the quarterfinal game, and I was, like, just angry as shit. And then they finally put me back in, and I fucking went like a fucking, just a moose running. Like, I was hitting everybody that was in my way. Like, I just went crazy on it.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, it was like, I got it back. I was still getting my ass kicked, and then I was playing tight end at the same time. And, it's like you said, you make people work for... show people that they're not entitled to shit.
Right, exactly. You gotta earn everything that you want. And that's the thing, like, in terms of, like, I just said it in a baseball example, but that's every sport. Yep. That's anybody that ever, you know, like, wants to play a sport. Like, that's a coach's job. And people get, you know, coaches sometimes get... backlash for replacing a kid or whatever. You see it a lot in, like, youth sports and shit or whatever. But, you know, you throw out this idea that, like, you know what? Like, you think that you're, you know, that you, this is your job to, you know, to lose. If somebody's better than you, you're going to lose it.
You're going
to lose it. I'm going to throw that kid in front of you because he's better than you. So, I don't care if he's 3 years younger than you.
You know, my boy races BMX. Like, he races on a track with, you know, humps and tables. McCoy lost like two races like in back to back weeks. McCoy had been taking like first or second.
Yeah, a little, you know. Yeah, and he's little McCoy, young kids too.
McCoy didn't get a trophy for 2 weeks in a row. Like, kids were coming out to like beat McCoy. I was like, that's why you can't joyride.
Yeah.
You can't just joyride, you can't just coast. You gotta keep pushing it, buddy. Did I win? I go, no, you didn't. You're not gonna get a trophy. And he's sitting there waiting for a trophy, and it was like the saddest thing for me to sit there and see him. I was like,
that's a hard knock.
I looked at him, I was like, you're not getting a trophy today, buddy. You didn't win. And he just looked at me, he's like, just sad.
Yeah.
You know, just sad. I was like, all right, well, let's go get you an ice pop.
And that's the thing, too. It's like, you know, like, you want to reward the kids for putting in a good effort.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know what I mean? It's like...
But he didn't want...
You can reward them as a parent.
Yeah.
But, like, if a kid shows up... And like, well, somebody beats them, and that kid has a trophy. You're not gonna go be like, "Hey, I want that trophy from that kid."
Yeah, you know, like, I'm not gonna say get a participation trophy. Right. I don't like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm one of the people that are like, you know what, participation trophies are the stupidest fucking thing on the face of the earth. I mean, like, I can't think of anything dumber than a participation.
I agree trophy. With you.
Remember back in the day. This is, you know,
I used to get ribbons for ribbons. Track.
That's what I'm talking
ribbons
about.
Ribbons for track.
Yeah, no. So when you're growing up,
you competed. No, like, I don't want that. I want like, a first placer.
Yeah, total side conversation here. But like, you get those, you know, when you're growing up and, you know, you're even t-ball or, you know, like little kid, you're playing t-ball or you're whatever kind of like youth sport you're doing, basketball. And there's like this set of like ribbons. So you get like, everybody gets a ribbon, right? You know what I mean? Like the participation shit. Yes. So you get the first place. It's like the blue ribbon, big blue ribbon, and then you get like a small trophy when you're a kid. Second place gets a red ribbon and a smaller trophy.
Yeah.
And then everybody else gets like a red, white, and blue. So you're taking the two ribbons' colors and you're throwing them in on a white. It almost looks like the ribbons for the participation trophies were like just as good. You know, you know what I'm saying?
But no, you just get a ribbon. That's
right. So they're just getting.
I want a trophy. No, you got to get.
They don't get a trophy.
You got to get the fuck out of here.
So for me, growing up, like, I got that red, white, and blue ribbon playing on a team where I was like doing everything for everybody type of deal. You know, like, I was shortstop, third, second, first, outfield. I did everything. Like, I was the only person that hit the ball, the gap, and you know, home runs type of thing. But this is like, youth, no, hear me out here. This is like youth baseball. I'm not kidding you. I was on a really, really bad team. And I, even as like a little kid, I was super competitive.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this. To this day, like, I'll never forget this because I got punished for it. So, like, we ended up, like, being, like, one of the worst teams in the league. But we ended up playing, like, the last game of the year or whatever. And it's, like, our, you know, they call it, like, a playoff game for little kids and shit.
Yeah.
And so, like, I hit a ball. And we scored and we ended up going up by one. We lost in the last inning because, like, another kid. Like, this is like, right after T-ball. So, this is, like, youth, like, slow-pitch baseball.
Yeah.
Like, underhand. And kid hits a ball. And we ended up losing the game because somebody, like, misses it. And I lose my shit. I'm, like, a little kid. I'll never forget this because I got punished for it. One of my teammates, like, youth baseball, like, I don't remember who it was, but, like, dropped the ball. Like, I was trying to, like, get the ball, pick it up, and, like, run down the kid or whatever, and I had to throw it to the kid that was playing, like, for third base.
Yeah.
And I threw it right into the kid's, like, chest, you know, because I didn't want to, you know, like, even as a little kid, my dad was always like, you know what, like, you got to throw it here or whatever. He's, like, teaching me, like, no, you can't run it over and tag the guy. Like, you got to trust your teammates or whatever. So I throw the ball. It hits a kid right in the tits, and he falls down and cries. So he's weeping on the ground, and the kid's rounding third to go home.
Who is the kid?
I don't remember the kid's name. Oh. I don't. This is a long time ago.
Was it Pat Bopre?
I don't think so. So the kid ends up running home and scores. He loses the game, and I'm, like, sitting there, like, in disbelief. I lose it. Like, I'm a little kid, so I'm, like, you know, after T-ball, so I've been, like, 8 or 9 years old, right? So I'm, like, crying because I hate losing. Even as a little kid, which is no different now, I cry when my teams lose now. Yeah. So it doesn't really fucking matter. But so anyway, we ended up losing the game. And, like, I knew that if we would have won the game that we'd have gotten, like, a red ribbon instead of, like, a red, white, and blue bullshit, you know, thanks for playing asshole type of trophy.
Yeah.
So we get to the whole, like, end of the team, shake hands or whatever, and then they line everybody up and give people ribbons, and they give me the red, white, and blue little piece of shit that they give people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, and I remember I took the red, white, and blue ribbon, and I immediately, like, threw it on the ground, and I stole a kid's red ribbon from the other team.
Yeah.
And I just, like, brought it back with me, and my dad, like, lost his shit on me. I'll never forget, like, I lost his shit on me. And so, like, at the end of the day, like, we used to go after the season to go get, like, ice cream, you know, the little kid or whatever. And my dad was like, you know, you should probably, like, give that back. Or we're not going to get ice cream. You know what I mean?
I feel like your dad gave you oatmeal instead. Like,
my dad was the voice of
reason. Everybody else gets ice cream. Drew, you get oatmeal.
And that's because you kicked
cream
that
of wheat.
Yeah. That's because you stiff-armed your own teammate in the face to make that oat. I was that kid. Everybody knows that kid that was like, tried to do everything and didn't trust his teammate. That was me when I was a kid.
Solon was that kid. Solon was that kid in Legion Bowl.
Solon was too. We never played together though in youth baseball.
No.
But yeah, no, like, that's the thing. Like, the participation trophy, I never sat well with me. And even as an adult now, it's even worse. Because you see kids babied to this day shit like that.
That's,
like,
what I'm trying to teach.
Being, it's okay to lose and all that
stuff.
That's
what I'm trying to teach, like, okay,
fucking
so
weak.
You have me, who is a little bit more hard-headed. And then you have Allison, who's like, everybody's
happy. Wins. Yeah.
And, you know, like,
there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Unless you, but in a competitive fashion.
For me, it's a competitive thing. Like, and it's not that competitive. Like, with BMX racing, like, it's a new thing to me. So, like, I don't know what to expect.
I mean, and that's something. You don't know if McCoy's gonna want to do that later in life either. So it's like,
well,
you're kind of gearing.
I'm just getting ready for it. Like, I don't know what goes into it or anything like that. Really, like, I can just teach McCoy how to do certain things about it. But I was like, McCoy, if this is what you want to do, here's what some of the guys do when they get older. And then he sees, like, the big,
even though it's not, like, your expertise, you know what I mean? Like,
I was like, here's,
if your son likes to do it.
Yeah. And I was like, here's the big vert ramp that they do in the X Games. Like, this is what you can transition to. He's like, I want to do that. And Allison goes, no, you're not doing that. You know, it's a big 40-foot just drop down, and, like, they're hitting over that big gap where it's, like, you get 60 feet of air, and they're doing backflips, and, like, the guys are laddering. I was like, oh, my God, that's so cool. And then we were watching it when they were in Minneapolis, and a guy hit it on his bike.
You guys went to the...
No, we were watching it on the TV.
Oh.
And the guy hits the ramp, and he does this ridiculous, like, 720, like, tail whip deal. And he lands it, and he goes up the vert ramp to catch major airs, what they call it. The guy gets, like, 35 feet up off that ramp, and next thing you know, he fucking crashes his bike
and goes down with a concussion, like hard. It was it was so just like, and McCoy's like, Dad, why is he sleeping? I was like, I sat there, I didn't know what to say. I was like,
I don't know what to tell you, son.
I go, if you overthink it, sometimes you're gonna fall.
Right.
And that's all I could say to him. And then my wife's like, don't tell him that. I was like, well, he's gotta learn. Like, I don't want him to try to do a 720 tail whip on a 2 foot gap.
Can't
and next thing, he just crashed and he just down. And I was like, oh, God.
So in a non-sports topic related question for you.
Yes.
What are you prepared to, when your son comes up one day and
you
asks
said
you,
son. I thought you were going to say
and
son.
And asks you a question that you don't know. Like, and he's older and he knows that if you tell him something that you're full of shit. How do you like, respond to your son's questions when you know he's going to be smarter than you?
I say Google.
Perfect. Because that's what I would do.
That's what I would do. Yeah. That's what I'm going to have to do. Yeah. Dad, what do I do on a 720 split on an option here?
Or not even like sports related. Just like if McCoy was like, Dad, I got this chemistry. He's going to eventually, kids always do it. Kids will come up to you later in life. You always test your parents.
Let's be real here. I was very impressed that I took like chemistry and shit like that like in college. Like I was impressed with myself. Because I did not know what the fuck I was doing, but I still got, like, B's in it. Like, I was impressed. Like, I can answer to a certain extent. But I always tell Allison this. I go, I was really street smart. Book smart was completely different. If you put me in, like, business ethics, if you took me into, like, a philosophy class or something like that, I can bullshit.
Billy Madison stuff.
Yeah, I can bullshit. Because in anything, if you look at ethics or anything like that, if you can make a resounding statement, like that's why I was so good at like business law. That's why I wanted to go into business law so good.
Because you could bullshit your way through.
I can make like a good statement for something to prove,
even though you actually had no idea what the fuck.
If I,
you were
well, that was the
about.
Thing. Like if I could prove some truth, I would be fine. Jesus Christ, senior year, we were taking business law class, and our last like final was to win a case. Like to win a case, you would get an A+ if you won a case.
Right.
Like, if you posed, like, a good statement and, like, you had a good case in general, your person still got convicted of something, you would still... You could get an A.
Okay, so, like, you bribed somebody, is what you're saying.
I was going against John Kiefenheim, and I know the girl that they gave who was a witness was never going to understand anything was
Bobby,
going
you've
on.
Always been able to convince people that... Of
I should have been a lawyer. I should have been a fucking
Michigan.
Lawyer.
Come on.
But it came to this, and it was John Kiefenheim who was... 4.0,
yeah,
he
really
was
guy, yeah.
All-American academic. He was also an all-state academic.
How are you an all-American academic
well,
in
he was,
high school?
He was, I'm sorry, he was an all-state academic.
Okay, that would make more sense.
And
if that's real, I don't know.
Not, yeah, he was. He was the only guy that made the state team because of academics and stuff like that for football. And I was like, how did Murray get it? But he was a guy that had like a 32 on his ACTs or whatever.
Oh, yeah, one of those.
He was smart. Yeah, he might have had 34, I'm not sure. But either way, he was going against me in this class, and Kiefenheim came up, and he had some really good shit. Like, he was just blowing me away. I was like, how the fuck did he get this out of here? And I'm proving my case, and I go on and ask the witness, who was another girl from her class, and I asked her some questions. The next thing you know, she didn't know any of the answers. I was like, yeah, but in a proven statement, you said that this is what happened. She goes, I don't know. I think I did. Maybe. I don't know. And I got it. I got the case thrown out because the witness didn't know any of her statement. So basically, it was like purgatory. She was lying in court. Not purgatory.
Perjury.
Purgatory.
Purgatory. She's probably going to be in purgatory, too.
Probably, because she's going to hell now. But it was perjury because she was lying in court. And then literally, the teacher goes... Just got up right away and just started clapping. I was like, yeah, I got an A+.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Yeah.
And Kiefenheim was fighting it the whole way. I was like, nope, can't go. Class is done. Got out. I'm out. Yeah. Kiefenheim. And I was like the happiest cat in the world because I just bullshitted my way into winning a case.
Bobby, if there's one thing people that know you well know you're good at, it's being sarcastic and a bullshitter.
Yeah. 100%.
You're an elite bullshit.
I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, working heavy machinery.
We're on this podcast. We don't know what the fuck we're doing.
I don't know.
I never know if you're telling
me. We're still on? Oh, shit.
We're live.
we're live. Bert, Anthony LaPantha kicking. Where the fuck did we come from this?
I don't know.
We were talking about Miami football. Okay, let's go back into the D. Miami's defense, let's get back into the LSU little segment. It's only about 5 minutes long, guys. Miami has extremely talented D-backs in the backfield. Jaquan Johnson is actually a very talented safety, actually on the top of draft board for a lot of guys.
Yeah, I know. There's
be up for that NFL team.
I know. He's very, very highly thought of.
We actually have Sheldrick Redwine, who's talented as well. Trayshon Bandy, Robert Knowles. The list goes on. We have a very talented secondary. But we also have three starting linebackers that have been starting since freshman year who are going to be huge for us again. Zach McLeod, Michael Pinckney, and Shaq Quarterman, who are going to be the bee's knees when it comes to drafting linebackers in the draft. Pinckney is probably, in my opinion, the better of all three, because Pinckney is a guy that's all around. Shaq Quarterman is a great tackler. He can read positions really well, but Pinckney, there's something special about him I had to see. You're looking at defensive line, Joe Jackson on the end. You have Jonathan Garvin, and then you also have Jared Wills coming back after taking a year off. Yeah, Patrick Bethel. I mean, all guys who have had significant playing time on the defensive line. I think that's what a lot of people are holding against us, is that we don't have the defensive line that we've had in the past. But yet, everybody has played. Everybody has played last year. Everybody had significant playing time. I'm not talking about a blowout. I'm not talking about, like, at the half, it's 31-7. I'm talking about tight games every one of these guys have played. Jonathan Garvin came up huge against Notre Dame last year with a strip sack and another strip, actually.
Right.
All around, I just don't understand what people are talking about. Obviously, I think we're going to be struggling a little bit with Jarrell Wills, him being the biggest guy we have on our defensive line. We lost, obviously, Roger McIntosh, and we lost Kendrick Norton, but I think that Manny Diaz's defense is going to be huge, like usual. It's about the pressure he puts on, not about the players that he has playing, really, truthfully. Oh, no. That is a touchdown. That is a sick catch.
Notre Dame in a row.
But LSU, the only thing you really got going for you right now that I've seen is Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow is the quarterback, actually a transfer from Ohio State.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
They don't have really a running game after losing Geis last year.
Yeah, Geis.
Their second running back actually only had like 300 yards rushing. The receivers, not really anything talent. They have had two transfers at quarterback after Burrows was announced. So if Burrows goes down, I don't know what the fuck's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's, you know, LSU is a team that typically has a lot of talent.
Yep.
But in the last few years, they've kind of been stuck in that, you know, mid-tier, like, you know, play a good game here, play a terrible game there. It's a very inconsistent team for the last 3 or 4 years. So, I mean, if they're going to beat Miami, they're going to have to play a good game, and they're going to have to play, you know, they're going to have to play consistent. They're going to have to be able to, first of all, stop the run, because Miami's going to try and go run first.
Oh, yeah.
You know that as well as I do. If they have a, you know, they have a three-headed backfield, they have two or three guys that can run the football, they got a solid offensive line. They're going to have to stop the run first. That's how it starts. And then you're going to have to put pressure on the quarterback.
Yep.
And LSU has always had good defensive linemen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to find out if this is the same type of LSU defensive line that they've had in the
past.
Like, and that's going to be the big test for them. Because they're also, LSU is also fairly inexperienced.
Okay, so me and Sonny, we went to Park Rapids a while back. And Sonny was riding with me with the kids. And Sonny was reading me. Sonny got the Athletes or Athlon, the sports magazine, to read off the lineups. And Sonny was going through quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, all sorts of stuff. Line, everything was seemed weak. Like, not weak in a sense, like, so they suck.
It was slightly inexperienced.
Unexperienced, yes. He got to the corners, unexperienced. Linebackers, they had one standout, and then they went to the defensive line. Now, the defensive line was inexperienced, but their size is what scared the shit out of me. Yeah. You're talking about guys who are 6'7", 340 pounds, guys who are 6'5", 320 pounds. Their defensive line is stout. Now, if we can block them, we can shut down. If they don't shut down the gaps, if they're slow and we can push them away from the gap and get open, I think we can really create some havoc. But it's a big test for us. Number 8 that's versus tough, number 20.
Anytime you're throwing together two ranked teams in the first week of the season,
but
you don't really know what you're going to get.
I love it.
But there's also something at the end of the season, if you do play well and whoever wins that game, that's something to hang your hat on later in the season. Yep. Because a lot of SEC schools, LSU is the exception here, don't schedule shit in the offseason. SEC is the most pussy-assed scheduling fucking conference in the entire nation.
Yeah.
And they do. Like, the Alabama's going to play fucking Binghamton or some bullshit school like that in week 10 before the playoffs. For like a 2 month.
You're right. Yeah, they usually do.
It's
everybody starts their season with that cupcake team. They do it like
mid season. There's two. Auburn does it too sometimes. But but all these SEC schools do this. Like they it's very rare that an SEC school besides LSU and Georgia are the exceptions. LSU and Georgia will go out and they'll schedule a BCS level team. Yeah. Now Alabama did it this year. They have Louisville this year, but they also schedule a team like South Dakota, like week 9 for like a tune up for like their bigger games, which they work on things. It's like a practice, and it's sad. I mean, like, and then they still get voted into these playoffs, which bothers me even more. It's like they get rewarded because they go out and kill a team that's terrible.
Yeah,
like, you know. Well, thing I'll say is that Alabama at least did play Louisville tonight. They're playing Louisville right now. They did play them tonight. Alabama
those games, are scheduled like out. Like years before, like when Louisville is out, like you have no idea what Louisville's gonna be in 2 years. It's like when NDSU scheduled Oregon,
right?
And for 2019,
you have no idea.
Like Oregon was ranked,
right?
You know, like you have no idea. But that's a good testament to like now you don't know what the fuck it's gonna be. Like, beating a big team.
NDSU is kind of like the Alabama of the FCS.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're kind of in that territory, and you know, like they got that. I liken them to, like, NDSU is kind of a very similar to, like, a Wisconsin, where they do the whole power run game.
Yep.
They've got a quarterback that can make the throws, but doesn't have to if the running game's working.
Yep.
But can do it when they, you know what I mean? Like, he's one of those guys. He's a well-rounded quarterback, throws well, he can run a little bit.
When Sonny actually sent me a message, and he talked to me about, like, you know, an analyst said that out of all the big Miami schools, quote-unquote, Miami had the best talent overall.
Florida schools.
Yeah, Florida schools. I'm sorry, what did I say? Miami?
Miami schools.
Yeah.
So there's only one.
yeah, there's only one.
So Miami would be the best school in Miami.
But somebody sent me that quote, and I go, well, when I look at it, I look at Malik Rozier and I look at Joe Burrow's, there's not really a whole lot of difference. One's more a little bit more dynamic, one can run a little bit better, but then there's one that can also throw better than the other. When I look at Joe Burrow's going to be a little bit more accurate.
He's a pocket guy.
But he can scramble if he wants. Whereas Rozier, if he feels the pressure come on, he can run if he wants. Like, the guy was a shortstop. Like, he came to Miami to play a dual sport, playing shortstop and football, and he basically just went to football after he found out what he can do. And I'm looking for Malik Rozier to fix up on a lot of stuff that he did last year, a lot of mistakes. As far as like being more clutch and being more accurate, and overall I'm really excited for the year. Despite the outcome of tomorrow, I'm not saying that Miami's gonna lose. I honestly don't think they're gonna be a blowout win, but I think you're really gonna be able to prove a lot of people wrong on what they're saying.
Yeah, I mean, if they win tomorrow, they're in the driver's seat for a while. I mean, until they play Clemson, like, they can't have any hiccups. They got to go, and if they want any kind of hopes and dreams of playing in the Final Four playoff system, they have to beat Clemson. If Clemson, I can't see them fucking up.
Yeah.
So you got to play Clemson for a big game at some point along the road. If you don't make a hiccup, you have to do this. That's your game. Like, you got to play solid week in, week out until you play Clemson.
I think when I look at it,
and that's going to be the telltale sign. Are you ready or not? Is when you play Clemson.
I think when I look at it, I think this is probably the most even year that we're going to have playing Clemson, as far as talent wise overall on the team.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that 100%. Now Miami's always talented.
They're always talented, but I think they finally have enough backups, young talent as well.
Yeah,
to play along with everybody. I'm not disregarding the young talent we have on our team. Like, we have a guy who was actually a safety and a fucking receiver in high school, Drew, who was 6'7", a 220-pound, basically a safety and a receiver. He got transitioned into being a D lineman. He had like 3 sacks in the spring game. He had 4 sacks in fall. Like, the guy's going to be, he's a project. He's like a Calais Campbell that plays for the Jaguars. So he's going to be huge. But, and that's not the same thing about anybody else that we have. We have Lorenzo Larkin and all these other guys that are just going to be tearing stuff up. And I'm excited for this year. I'm excited for LSU. I don't know if you want to talk about, you want to touch base on Minnesota Viking football?
We can. I mean, like, it's cut week, so everybody's, that you see a lot of these.
Yep.
You know, like, you see today they cut Terrence Newman. Well, they didn't cut Terrence Newman. Retired. Terrence Newman found out he was going to get cut.
Retired.
Or smart. They wanted him to cut. So Terrence Newman is now a new defensive, I think he's like an assistant secondary coach. They add him to the staff because he wasn't going to make the team. With the Ioka signing, he was out.
He's not a bad guy. The guy that's learned how to play the game, and he's never been bad in his career.
Terrence Newman's been great every year. Exactly. He's been solid
last year. Last year he was 40?
39.
Yeah. The guy who played almost until he was 40 years old.
In the secondary. Still played the game. Exactly. In the fucking secondary. And that's incredible. Can you name the one guy that you can... Who's the best 40-year-old, 39-year-old guy that you can think of that ever played in the NFL? Darryl Green. Darryl Green was one of the best old defensive back.
Darryl Green, he played both ways, though, for a while, didn't he?
Well, he was a kick returner for a while, but I think, but he was an incredible defensive back, Hall of Fame defensive back, and he didn't until he was 40. You'll never see that. Him and Newman, you'll never see it. Right? Redskins. You'll never see it.
He played for the Pats.
Oh, he did play for the Pats. Yeah, for a year.
But no, I completely and humbly agree with you on that point. It's like, you take a guy that's known a lot about a game, you take him, you bring that talent in, you bring that wisdom, I think, in quite a bit. I think it's huge. When we discuss things like the Vikings, obviously, we wanted to see guys like Winicky actually make the team. We wanted to see guys make the team quite a bit. Winicky got cut, unfortunately. We had other few cuts. I was actually expecting Stacey Coley to be cut, truthfully. Stacey Coley was a huge part of the team for me coming in, because I thought he was going to take that third receiver spot. And then Laquon Treadwell came in playing, and Laquon Treadwell he's had a great preseason. When you look at Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, and you look at Treadwell, I think you have a great receiving core. I'm glad that he finally came into his own. But the fact that they're still keeping on Stacey Coley with all his injuries in the spring and the fall is very surprising to me. I think the Vikings are promised to have a great season.
I mean, they should. When I look at the Vikings roster now, and you look at all the cuts they made, they cut
Robinson. Robinson.
They cut Robinson, and anybody who's been a Vikings fan, you know, is a reasonable Vikings fan that he's a guy that's always been a solid football player and a solid dude, a leader, a guy that kind of understands, you know, how football is supposed to be played, how you're supposed to operate on a day-to-day basis. Like, you got all these young guys that you know, every year, Robeson, who's been around for 10 years now for the Vikings, he's the only guy left from the 2009, Favre's last year in the 2000, you know what I mean? When they went to the NFC title game. He's the only guy left on the team. And he's, you know, he's always been a leader, kind of the leader type, even if he wasn't playing every snap. And in a locker room in the NFL, and here's where I think that they're going to miss him the most, is I feel like, you know, and this is just my own personal opinion here, but when you bring in a new batch of 20-year-old kids or 21-year-old kids to the NFL,
that
don't,
entitled.
And then they don't understand, you know, adulthood yet. Like, they're not, I mean, they're still kids. When I was 21, I was puberty. Still getting shit-faced and passing out behind bridges.
Well, that's just no different than Spies would do.
It's probably true.
Spies does still to this day.
But when you think about it, he's the guy that always kind of seemed like the older he got, it was kind of the guy that helped
wiser
rookies transition into the NFL. Like, you need veterans to kind of show you, you know what? Don't be a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, don't come in here and think that you're going to be able to go smoke, you know, weed in the off season and not get caught, or like, don't hit your girlfriends or you know what I mean? Like, it's just those little things, not little things, but like those things that you need a veteran presence for that type of deal. And now we lose that because him and Newman are now gone. We got guys that are, you know, veterans and, like, you know, like the... But there's still... There's a leadership role that has to be taken from that. Do we know who that is yet? No, we don't. And that's the thing. You got to have a guy in your locker room that kind of brings the team together and moves them forward and also kind of protects their well-being.
Yeah.
That was Robeson. He's gone now. So how do you react to that? How do you transition there? And we're talented enough to do really good things this year. Really good things. Somebody's got to step up and take that role. Every locker room needs a leader. And he seemed to be that kind of a guy.
If I could get paid to be a locker room leader, I would.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, he didn't play much the last couple years.
Can you just imagine me walking next to those Giants, though? I'm like, yeah, let's get it, boys! And they're, like, just pushing me around.
I think he'd just, like, make people laugh more than you would, like, actually teach them how to do shit, you know?
Oh, God. So, this whole week, I've been trying to get ready for the draft next year.
Next year?
Yeah.
What draft?
NFL.
Jesus, that's like fucking a decade away here now.
Me and my boy Bryce Hill have been playing catch. He ended up leaving me this week to go to Northwestern chiropractic school. And I'm very upset right now because I don't have that talent to actually transition me into there. So Bryce, if you're listening to this, much love, my friend. Best of luck on your future endeavors. But I got to find new people to play with. So get ready for me. 2019 NFL draft. So, but guys, we're going to end the podcast here because we're almost going on 2 hours of a podcast. This is going to be the first time Thanks a lot, alcohol. And we're also going to say thanks a lot to the beginning of the college football season. So many topics to talk
about. Can you thank a season? Is that how does that work?
I'm going to do it today. Well, just for the sole fact that this is the reason we've been talking so goddamn much. So many things to talk about, and it's going to be transitioning through the rest of the season. Trust me, they're not all going to be two-hour podcasts, but they will be, to say the least. Well, I thank you guys for tuning in. If you guys have a favorite team you guys want us to talk about, let us know, guys. Just send us a message. Talk to us. Send Drew a message. Send us an email. Send us a message on Anchor or just contact us in some way, shape, or form, and we'll start talking about it a bit.
We'll try. There's no guarantee. It'll probably be just
bullshit. if you're gonna be like talking about Northland football, I'll try my best. I don't know about anything about them ever since I played, but that's done for. I don't know a whole lot. I don't follow the program.
Yeah, no, it's better talking.
We'll talk about the Fighting Gustos here when it comes to spring football or spring baseball, and that's about it. But. Drew, any last comments, words, concerns, anything like that, my friend?
Let's get weird.
Let's get weird. All right, guys. LSU, Miami, come check it out tomorrow. 6:30, get ready for it. The U coming back with some swag.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.